afternoon. My name is Lisa Martin, and most of my colleagues are here that are on this with me, except for Dr. Odd, who is our director. He couldn't be here today. So I'm going to go ahead and start. My presentation was on increasing response rates, basically through a mail survey, through a very intense longitudinal follow-up algorithm that we developed. And we took a really simple look at cost benefit versus how much of an increase in response rate and how much cost we were spending. As you know, response rates differ depending on the methodology that you use. Phone response rates, 40 to 80%. Mail response rates are one of the lowest. You can get anywhere from 5% to 30%, maybe a little bit higher, but online, kind of the same thing. And then, of course, personal in-home is going to be higher. We did a mail response, mail survey that I'm going to talk about a little bit further. And as we all know, it's very important when you're analyzing your results what your response rate is, because you need to be able to explain those that didn't respond if their characteristics are any different. It can bias your results. For instance, we're in cardiac surgery, so if our non-responders might be clinically different than those who respond, they might be sicker, they might have come into the hospital differently. So in what we do, non-response is very much an important issue. And we found this out as well when we were starting to submit papers from a previous data set that our institution did. We were getting a lot of criticism from reviewers for journals on a response rate that our institution had at 44%, which really isn't too terrible. It was a 10-year time frame, but typically in the medical literature, a lot of the surgery journals are used to clinical trials or device trials where the response rate is almost a given. And so this idea of, what do you mean it's only 44%? So we, in this previous survey, they just did mail surveys. It was a 10-year time frame. They mailed out the follow-up surveys after the baseline enrollment at specified time points, but there was no follow-up. If the people didn't send them back, they didn't follow up with them. There were no incentives. It was literally just a really basic mail operation. So to improve upon this, we developed a multiple contact algorithm. Our department was fairly new at the hospital, and we got tasked with carrying out this long-term follow-up survey that had been done before. So we revamped, basically, the entire program of the follow-up, and then wanted to take a look at how much expenditures we utilize, resources, personnel, all that kind of thing, and what kind of an increase in response rate we got to see if it was justified. So we developed a prospective longitudinal design, and basically we collected data on health-related quality of life. We used a standardized measure, a short form, 12 questions at baseline, and then our follow-up was designed to follow these patients post-surgery basically forever at specified time points, and also merge clinical data, not only when they came into the hospital, but then post-surgery we had a set of clinical questions that some of the surgeons and experts had put together that we wanted to track over time. So the patients are open heart surgery patients. They come in on their day of surgery, and we basically talk to them on the day of surgery and get their enrollment then. Information is given to them at that time. They take home a letter that explains the follow-up. They're given quite a few materials that will explain to them that this is just going to be somewhat part of their procedure of coming into the hospital. And then we have a consistent patient contact and patient positive reinforcements, and I'm going to go into those. So I know you really can't see this, but we did develop this very detailed algorithm to go into when the mailings would go out post-surgery, what we would do when we got a response back, what would we would do when we didn't get a response back, how would we deal with the no responses, how much effort would we put in. We basically came up with an algorithm so that basically anyone in our department who had to deal with this study would know, okay, it's this time of the month and we, you know, what's going on and we haven't got responses from these. So basically, we do a monthly mailing after the baseline. So on any given month, we personalize the letter to the patient. We include the data collection forms. We give them a postage paid return envelope. We include an incentive where we do a quarterly drawing for Visa gift cards that if they return their survey. We also include a postcard for readmission that gives them contact, so we're asking them at some point, because hospital readmission data is very hard to get outside of our institution, so we're just trying to be able to paint a clearer picture of them, you know, 2 years out. So we're asking them to let us know if they've had a hospital admission. When the surveys come in, we send a thank you postcard to thank them for their response and reiterate how important this information is to us. And then about halfway through the month, we do a reminder postcard mailing to all those people who haven't responded. We send out a reminder postcard, again, telling them how important the survey is and why they should send it back and be a part of this. And then we also start a round of 3 phone calls. We do follow-up phone calls to the patients to try and get the surveys over the phone or see if they've lost the survey, want to mail it back. And then at the end of the month, we resend the surveys again with another letter saying, you know, sorry, we haven't heard from you. We hope you're well. Basically, our theory is that the more we can bring these patients in at baseline and then afterwards, that they'll stay with us and really feel a part of what we're doing so that we'll have 5-year data, we'll have 10-year data, especially because we were able to get mortality data. So the more we can say 5 years out of these patients are doing post-surgery in combination with clinical data and quality of life data and mortality data. So we've put a lot of effort. We also do a keep in touch letter. So at the time points where it's not specified that they need to send us back data, we actually just send them another letter saying, hi, how you doing? We hope you're recovering well. If you have any questions, and pretty much on everything we do, we have a clinical nurse administrator on our staff, and so they always feel like there is a clinical person that they can get in contact with other than their general practitioner, other than their cardiologist, other than the surgeon who did their surgery 2 years ago. There's a contact there that if they have a question, they can always pick up the phone, and so we include that in everything we do, that we make it a very open line of communication. We have basically 2 arms to our study. We have the cardiac-only population, or patients who have basically an open-heart procedure that is not a Mays surgical procedure. So they have a coronary artery bypass or a valve replacement or something like that. And we follow them basically 6 months post-surgery and then 1 year and then yearly thereafter. And the other population is a specialty of our director. It's a very special surgical procedure for atrial fibrillation. And clinically, there's a lot more importance placed on the following of those patients post-surgery based on the medications they should be on post-surgery. So not only are we a research center, but we also have a clinical piece. Because we are finding out this information long term, there's a responsibility from a clinical perspective to actually potentially intervene with these patients. If we see they're on medications because of our research data, we have to do something about that if we know clinically that's not correct. So again, our Linda takes care, and then she coordinates with our physician, and then he gets involved if necessary, and there's a follow-up protocol that goes with that. And so we follow them a lot more closely. Basically, every 3 months for the first 2 years, we're in contact with them, either by phone or by mail. Basically, our patients are followed forever unless they self-withdraw, unless they die, or they just completely lost a follow-up, meaning their address is incorrect. Right now, we have not taken anybody out for non-response. So even if they don't, if we enroll them at baseline and they respond at 1 year, but they haven't responded at 2 years, we're still going to send it to them at 3 years. At some point, our program is, this study that we've implemented has been going for 2 years. So we're still pretty young in that respect. We haven't had to make that decision yet on how many time points of a non-response becomes futile to continue. So right now, our theory is we're just going to keep sending it until we decide otherwise. So basically, we calculated costs based on the number of mailings, personnel, and incentives, and pretty much anything and everything that could be calculated, we tried to account for. So our overall response rate basically increased by 30.51% to about 75% The general arm, as you can see, which is the cardiac-only population, is a little bit lower, but it's also a higher percentage of the population. The Mays arm is quite a bit, which is interesting. I mean, we contact them every 3 months, so we do. We also do some newsletters, so we really are kind of bringing them into everything we do, and we also disperse some of our research findings to them so that they can see the value of what they're providing to us, and hopefully they can see the benefit that they're getting from these, you know, questionnaires that we're sending in the mail every 3 months. And then we did just some rough, took a rough look at how many number of contacts it takes to get a survey, and basically about, you know, a little over 2 for the general prior to survey completion. So a contact is anything mailed to them, any kind of phone call, even if the patient called back or called us. So any kind of contact that we've had, any postcard we mail. So we just took just a real simple look at how many contacts it takes us prior to sending out the survey and then once it's completed. So this is just basically a graphing of our response rates. There's no statistical analysis with this. It was just a way to represent and to also look at some of the dips and you can theorize maybe why they're happening, like in July or August. Why did the cardiac population, why was that a bad month? What's that? Vacation. Which is true. And also some of it is staffing with us. We've gone through some staffing changes as far as the workload of being able to carry this out. So some months the phone calls didn't get done according to the protocol. But pretty much overall, we're pretty happy that we've been able to at least maintain this response rate over time. So basically we took the projection of what we pretty much know about how many surgeries our hospital is going to do on a yearly basis, and then we just calculated the number of patients falling into those time points. And you don't really need to pay attention to this. This is just kind of our algorithm. We took 5 years and basically costed out or projected how many patients would be falling into what time point over the next 5 years. So as you see, it grows obviously exponentially. And then we took a look at personnel, who's doing the enrolling, the data management, the clinical piece, the data analysis. We took into consideration all the supplies, the postage in and out, long-distance phone calls, licensing fees for the questionnaires that we use, incentives, pretty much anything. I mean, down to the detail of... This is just an example of the budget that we did, but I mean, we costed out how many labels are on each piece of paper that we send, how much those labels cost, how much the letterhead costs that we use, how much the envelopes. We really just wanted to get an idea, and part of it, those of you in research can appreciate, a part of it is also to justify to administration our existence, and we wanted to make sure, you know, are we saying something that we shouldn't be saying? How much money are we costing the institution, and is there value in what we're doing for, you know, for what we're spending? So basically we costed everything out, and our first year we projected, this is actually a little bit of a low estimate because I forgot one of our team members work on the project in this formula because he didn't used to sit with us. So if I don't see him, then I kind of forget about him. But our first year, we figured about $170,000 is what it cost us to set up this project and do the initial launch of it. And we figure about $100,000, you know, obviously going to grow over time. But at least it gives us an idea for the next few years, and it gives our administration an idea of the value of the data, being able to map it with mortality and being able to have a response rate that we have. So basically, I know mine's kind of short and sweet because I don't have any real statistical models, but basically we concluded that we didn't have the cost data from the first 10 years of the project. It was run in a different department. We really didn't have access to what kind of resources they spent. I know they didn't spend nearly probably what we've spent, but the increase in the response rate to be able to, you know, say that we have even a 70% response rate with a mailed survey tracking about 1,000 patients, we're pretty happy with that. You know, we're pretty happy with that, and we're pretty okay with what we've done. And we've made some changes. It's really starting to snowball right now, obviously, because we're going into our third year. But we're still maintaining that response rate. We've got some, we were able to secure some resources to hire some new staffing. So we really don't suspect that that will change. We actually suspect that it will, that our response rate should either maintain or maybe increase, especially in the maize population with these added people. So.